Everyone, this is Jax, and this is Good Old Days, and welcome back to the show where we get to listen to some old country and southern rock music here on radio.dominican.edu. So here is our game plan for today. We have an old country artist, then a southern rock song, and then I'm going to play a band that is both country and southern rock. But the song I chose from them, it has more of a country and a bluegrass feel to it. Actually, a bluegrass feel, if anything. And then we're going to hear a newer one from our modern segment. So let's start off with a classic country song by a man that I listen to at least once every day, Mr. Waylon Jennings, with his masterpiece, Are You Sure Hank Done It This Way?
Lord, it's the same old tune, fiddle and guitar. Where do we take it from here? Rhinestone suits and new shiny cars. It's been the same way for years. We need to change. Somebody told got it made. Old Hank made it here. We're all sure that you will, but I don't think Hank done it this way. No, I don't think Hank done it this way. Look at
Right, so there was Waylon Jennings with his song, Are You Sure Hank Done It This Way? And now let's discuss this legend, shall we? So Waylon Jennings, he has been a musician since the late 1950s, but it wasn't actually until the 70s that Waylon really became a super strong figure in the outlaw country movement. And he was an artist that really involved the honky-tonk style of music that was still traditional, but it was also a little bit more updated. And I mentioned outlaw country in our first show, so just a quick summary because I don't want to be too repetitive, but pretty much it was a big movement that went from the late 1960s and into the early 1980s with a lot of artists, actually. There's plenty of outlaw country musicians, and some of my favorite singers were involved in this subgenre, and they happen to be outlaw country singers. And we've actually heard a few of them, and we'll be hearing a lot more. Like Remember Willie, for example, he was a big participant in outlaw country, and we got to hear him on our first show for Good Old Days. I played his well-known song, Angel Flying Too Close to the Ground. And Waylon and Willie, they were quite the dynamic duo in outlaw country. There's a saying, I love this, there's a saying, you guys probably know this one. People say, where there's a will, there's a way. And for these two, the saying was, where there's a Willie, there's a Waylon. Get it? Willie Will and then Waylon Way. So like Willie, Jennings was classified, he was officially classified as outlaw country because of their rough and ragged appearance and their non-dependence on Nashville, which was really, really a strong influence in the music world at that time. So when hearing Waylon's music, I think it's pretty obvious to find the devoted honky-tonk background that he mixed with rock, and then he had rock and roll beats, and just that whole demeanor kind of came together. So that combination of his music gave his feel such a straightforward and such a raw kind of blend, and it went on to influence and inspire the artists of traditional, new, and even more subgenres of country in the 1980s, and then it just kind of went on from there. So throughout his career, Waylon was very strict with sticking to his own sound and not the pop music, which was what Nashville was really strongly pushing at that time. And that was his unwavering stance. He rejected Nashville and its characteristics. He refused to record with that industry's studio musicians. He really stuck with his gut feeling on that, and he never really changed it. So now let's go back to the very beginning of Waylon's journey. This famous man was born and raised in Littlefield in Texas, and he's just added to the list of legends that came from the Lone Star State. So far, we've had Willie Nelson, then we had Don Williams, George Strait, Jim Reeves, ZZ Top, and now we have Waylon Jennings. So as for Mr. Jennings, he started playing the guitar as an 8-year-old, and 4 years later, when he was 12, Waylon became a local DJ for a radio station. And shortly after that, he created his very first band, and that went for a while right in a school. But a few years after that, he actually ended up leaving school, and then he spent the future years picking cotton, and he ended up going to Lubbock, Texas, and he moved there in 1954. So he was only 17 years old, so he's still pretty young at this time. He then settled down in Lubbock, where he found a job at KLL, which was a radio station. And once at KLL, Waylon actually met another legend, Buddy Holly, during one of the radio shows. And after that occasion, Holly kind of turned into Jennings' mentor. He started to really teach him these guitar licks and joining Waylon on songs. And eventually he produced Waylon's very first single, Joel Blonde, that was released in 1958. So he kind of, in a way, I feel like he kind of took him under his wing a little bit. So later on in 1958, Jennings did end up playing in Buddy Holly's band. They were called the Crickets, and Waylon became the group's temporary bass player, but just long enough to perform with Holly on his last and final tour, because in early 1959, Buddy Holly, along with two other musicians, those guys were Richie Valens and J.P. Richardson, who is also known as the Big Bopper. I call him the Big Bopper. They got on an airplane headed to their next performance. They had just wrapped up in Iowa, and they were heading to Minnesota, I believe. And there's an older movie, actually, called La Bamba. It's about Richie Valens and, you know, his life and early childhood and how he kind of reached stardom. And this scene is actually in the movie, and it's pretty accurate. It's like almost like, whoa, like, that's so weird, that's so trippy, but it's really accurate. I mean, it shows the whole kind of thing and how it went down, and how they have the because Richie Valens did end up flipping a coin, and he won, so he got to go on the plane, and they show that in the movie, and that's really what happened. So Waylon was supposed to be on that plane, but at the last minute he ended up giving his seat up to the Big Bopper, who had a cold, so he stayed behind. And apparently This is so sad, I feel like, when this happens. Apparently, Buddy Holly said to Jennings, "I hope your old bus freezes up." And then Waylon shot back, still joking. He said, "Well, I hope your old plane crashes." And that's absolutely horrible because the plane did, in fact, it went down and it killed the three talented artists and the pilot. This is something I feel like ever since I was a little girl, my mom, especially my mom, has like drilled this into my head. She's like, never say something bad and then like leave the person, just because I feel like you do hear those stories sometimes where like siblings or husband or wife or whatever will like get in a fight and be like, "Oh, I hate you, like go to hell," or something like that. And then sure enough, a tragedy happens and that's the last thing you said to them. So even now, like if I get in a fight with my mom or if I like get in an argument with my brother, I feel like it never, I always cave in super quickly because I'm always the one to call them and be like, "I'm so sorry, I shouldn't have said that," just because it's like paranoid, like in the back of my head I'm like, "Well, I can't, like that can't be the last thing that I say to them." So anyways, obviously Waylon kind of is haunted, or he was haunted by those words, but I mean, such a, that's just so horrible how that happened. So after his friend's tragic death, Waylon Jennings came back to Lubbock, and that's where he spent two more years working as a DJ, once again until 1960. And it was later that year that he actually moved a little bit over west to Phoenix in Arizona, and that's where he formed his rockabilly band named the Wailers. Don't get that confused with because isn't there Bob Marley and the Wailers? But this was spelled like W-A-Y-L-O-R-S, so close to his name. And then Waylon and his Wailers, they started gaining momentum locally, and they earned a really good local following, actually, through several performances at nearby clubs. And that actually led them to signing with Trend in 1961. Trend at that time, it was an independent label, and unfortunately, it didn't really do much for the band's songs. None of their singles made any impressions whatsoever on the music world, but I do think it was like, at least he started getting experience. He got his foot in the door as far as creating music. So shortly after that, Jennings picked a new career as a record producer for Audio Recorders. And now he's age 26. Waylon, after that, he moved into Los Angeles, where he got a contract with Herb Alpert's A&M Records. Records, I like changed my accent there. And that time, Jennings' music, it was really considered pure country, but Herb Alpert wanted to shift him into the more pop-sounding music. And despite Alpert's attempts, Waylon Jennings, he didn't really budge, and he decided to release his own single on his own terms. He was really, like, strict about it, like, "I'm gonna do it my way," which I think is awesome. And that song, it was Sing the Girl a Song, Bill. And the rest of that album, it didn't really do that well for A&M Records. So after that unsuccessful run with A&M, Jennings landed another contract. This time he signed with RCA, and he moved to Nashville, Tennessee in 1965. And once he was in Nashville, Waylon actually moved in with the talented Johnny Cash, which sparked their friendship. And it did end up leading to a lot of collaborations later in the 1980s, especially in the Highwaymen. But that wasn't until later in his career. We'll talk about that in a bit. So that same year, Jennings released his first single through RCA called "That's the Chance I'll Have to Take." And it only reached the level of being a minor hit. So he's still not at a major one, and he's getting closer though. He's getting warmer slowly but surely. So shortly after that, Waylon followed up with a second single. This one was called "Stop the World and Let Me Off," and that made it into the top 40 country hits. So that song was really the beginning of more average hits, but they ended up turning into top 10 singles. So I really think that I like to consider that was the point in his career that he really started making a household name, and you know, it just kind of blasted off from there. So, for example, in the late 1960s, some of those songs were "Only Daddy That'll Walk the Line," "I Got You," it was a duet with Anita Carter, "Walk On Out of My Mind," and also "Yours Love." And these hits, they eventually led him into that specific combination between those two music genres that we were saying. It was like a half and half creation between a little bit of folk and a little bit of honky-tonk. But then the 1960s, they wrapped up and the 70s began. And at that point, that was the first little point where Jennings' music started to shift into more of a hardcore country sound. So he began recording a few songs by songwriter Kris Kristofferson, and that brought him into two really good albums that were that ended up being produced. One of those albums were Singer of Sad Songs, and the other was Ladies Love Outlaws. I think this is probably one of my all-time favorites by him. And it was on these two records that he first got recognized for the outlaw country sound. So his music, it really did showcase the rougher and the stronger sound, which soon went into collaborations with fellow outlaw country artist Willie Nelson. He then started to write and record plenty of songs with the famous songwriter, and around that time he actually switched up his contract with RCA. He ended up renegotiating the production of his music and for more control over his records. So I think really he could sense kind of that with the change in music, maybe, you know, he wanted to kind of start getting more strict with how his music was getting produced. So a year after that, this is in 1973, Waylon Jennings released his first album after the updated record contract. This album was called Honky Tonk Heroes, incorporating such a different rhythm. It had more bass, it had more edge, and a whole lot of honky tonk noise. And I actually kind of think that, are you sure Hank done it this way? You can kind of hear a little bit of that in that song. So with that new noise, Waylon gained more fans, and with the newly formed fan base, Jennings released his first song, his first number one song, I should say, in 1974, which is a favorite of mine called This Time, which was quickly accompanied by the next number one single. It's another favorite of mine. It's called I'm a Ramblin' Man. And then he had a number two hit that came after that called Rainy Day Woman. So Waylon Jennings, his success just kind of blossomed and went into 1975 with Dreaming My Dreams, introducing one of his most popular songs, which is this one. Are You Sure Hank Done It This Way? It got number 49 on the charts, and I think it's one of those songs that he gets recognized for a lot. So with that success under his belt, Waylon was chosen as the Country Music Association's Male Vocalist of the Year. And then in 1976, Jennings began to experiment with more mainstream music, including his participation in a multi-artist compilation called Wanted the Outlaws. And this collection mainly focused on Waylon, but it also displayed songs by his wife, Jessie Coulter, and of course, Willie Nelson. Overall, this assortment, it did reach the number one spot on the pop charts. So following the fame from Wanted the Outlaws, Jennings became very well known, and he was getting recognized as a superstar, and he was appealing to both the pop fans as well as the country audience. So that's awesome, I think, that he had these two kind of genres that he was in the middle of, and you know, they both still loved him. So with all that success, Jennings was coasting along for the next several years. Really, the next 6 years, they were really good ones for Waylon. His albums, they continued to chart in the pop top 50, and they consistently went gold. And it was at this time that Waylon and Willie, they officially became musical partners, and the two of them began recording many duets with each other. One awesome thing about this pair was their creation of Waylon and Willie, an album that was from 1978, and that housed the number one single, Mamas Don't Let Your Babies Grow Up to Be Cowboys. This is a really good song. I love this song. So thank you, Waylon, and thank you, Willie. After that album and into the start of the 1980s, Waylon launched 10 more number one hits. Some of those number ones were Lookin' Back, Texas, The Wurlitzer Prize, I've Always Been Crazy, Amanda, and Good Old Boys, which is the theme song for the Dukes of Hazzard. That song never gets old, and my life will it will be complete when I drive a 1969 Dodge Charger and just blast the Good Old Boys. And I'm serious about this. I feel like now it's just not the same, because I'll blast it in my car all the time, but it's just not the same feeling. So I'm adding General Lee to the bucket list, and I'm not going to quit until I reach that goal. So after all of this, Jennings' career, it started to slowly kind of, I mean, it didn't completely wind down, but it did slow down by the middle of the 80s. And this was the result from his drug abuse and the decreasing momentum of the whole outlaw country movement. However, this was kind of like a little bump in the road, but he got back on top. Waylon went cold turkey, and he fully quit his substance abuse in the middle of that decade when he later created the Highwaymen. So he put together this very talented bunch with friends Kris Kristofferson, Willie Nelson, and Johnny Cash. And after the formation of this group, they recorded 3 albums, I believe, with the band's debut leading the pack. It featured the hit single Highwayman. And later on in the 1980s, Jennings said his goodbyes to RCA, and he said hello to a new contract with MCA Records. This was in 1986. So once he signed with the label, he began producing a number of hit singles like Rose in Paradise. I absolutely love this song. But after that release, he couldn't live up to his expectations. And I feel like it's hard like that sometimes, because if you start off really strong, then you're kind of expected to just meet that level every time, which he didn't. He couldn't really reach the top 40 with any of the songs that followed that. So in 1990, Waylon Jennings switched labels once again. This time he signed with a label called Epic. Let me say this. I like his style. It was really like, that's pretty cool, man, because I feel like if he signed with the record label, and as soon as he didn't really start doing too hot, he was just like, well, you know what? I'll just switch and head over to another one. I like that style. He was very like, all right, whatever. Maybe I'll try my luck with them. So after the switch, he began making more hit singles. His first with Epic was Wrong, and it earned a place in the top 10. And then 1 year later, his song The Eagle hit the top 40 chart. Yay! But then he had a bit of a dry spell after that. No. And none of his new songs weren't really getting much recognition at all, to be honest with you. So this was mainly due to the fact that country music at this point, it was significantly starting to shift at this time. But despite the music's transformation, Waylon somehow was still a really popular artist during the 90s. And he still had so many fans at concerts and performances, all while his records, they frequently gained good reviews. So he didn't, even though he wasn't really considered like popular at that time, he still didn't really lose any of the spark really, and people still listened to him. So later in 1996, Jennings went ahead and he joined Justice Records, releasing the praised album Right for the Time. And then he brought another after that called Closing In on the Fire, which followed in 1998. So just as he was getting back into the swing of things, his health did catch up to him. It slowed him down and it brought some pretty big problems for him. Like the famous lead singer, remember when we talked about Molly Hatchet? We discussed the great Danny Joe Brown, or we called him for like half the show, DJB. But Waylon also struggled from diabetes like him, and it was really affecting even the simplest of tasks, like being able to walk, for example, was starting to become difficult for him. So a few years after Closing In on the Fire in late 2001, Waylon Jennings had his foot amputated because of the complications from the diabetes. And a few months later, at the start of 2002, he ended up passing away at his home in Arizona on February 13th. So that's Waylon Jennings for you. He made some really incredible music. And I mean, even closer to now, he almost got into the 2000s with his music. And I know we ended on a sad note for Jennings, and it's fair warning, it's going to get a bit more depressing. But then we're going to be back to happy again, you guys. I promise. So now it is our Southern Rock Song of the Day. And I am bringing Lynyrd Skynyrd back. Remember, I played Simple Man by this band for our very, very first show. And when I first introduced them, I briefly talked about how the group got their name, some of their history, and I also discussed some of the original members. And Simple Man was sung by their first lead vocalist, Ronnie Van Zant, but this song was sung by someone else, the guy who's now currently the lead singer for Lynyrd Skynyrd. Oh, I'm trying to create suspense. So this is another one of my favorite Skynyrd songs. I should have quoted this song for my senior quote in high school. I'm still pissed about it too. I'm still like, oh darn, I should have, but I didn't. I went with some cliche quote by Bob Marley. Not that Bob Marley's like not cool or anything. I know some of his songs, but I don't really listen to him enough to have made that my senior quote. I chose my senior quote by skimming through previous yearbooks, and I just picked one that someone else had used. I think I found like one of the most popular girls. I'm not even kidding. I was weird in high school. I found one of the most popular people, and they had used like a Bob Marley quote, and I was like, yeah, that's what I'll do. But it should have been from this song. Shoulda, woulda, coulda, but oh well. So Simple Man was sung by Ronnie, and now this is Born to Run, sung by somebody else.
There's an old man sitting on the front porch now, talking about how he used to be. When I was young, I was a hell of a man. My father died when I was 10. I hit the road to find a job, had to feed my family. Times are hard, my head's still scarred from the life I've had. Tractor and trailer all my life. Six kids and a hell of a wife. Made lots of money, it all slipped away. A large family, that's the price you pay. I always dreamed, never gave up. Son, even when times got tough, that's when I push it a little bit more. You should have heard that engine roar. I was born. Born to run, and time you'll see
right. Once again, that was Lynyrd Skynyrd with their song Born to Run. I had to cut that one just a tad short because it's more than 7 minutes long. So as I mentioned before we heard the song, it was performed by another singer who replaced Ronnie Van Zant as the lead vocalist for Lynyrd Skynyrd. Ronnie's last album that he was able to sing was Street Survivors. It was released on October 17th in 1977, just 3 days before the band's huge loss. So after Street Survivors on October 20th and only 5 shows into their tour, Lynyrd Skynyrd's chartered plane, they radioed in that they were very low on fuel. And shortly after that, the plane crashed into a heavy wooded area in the swamps of Mississippi. When the airplane went down, the crash killed Ronnie Van Zant. It killed guitarist Steve Gaines and fellow vocalist Cassie Gaines. And it also killed their road manager, Dean Kilpatrick. And it greatly injured the other band members and the other crew members. Quick little story, actually. My mom's friend, Olivia, she actually has another friend, Jerry. And he ended up working with Lynyrd Skynyrd. And he was part of the group's crew. He got to go, you know, travel around with them and help set up. And he was with the band on the airplane when it crashed. And to this day, he refuses to step on an airplane. And after that tragedy and surviving something like that, I wouldn't either. And when Olivia told me that story, I remember freaking out over the fact that he worked with Skynyrd and was friends with, you know, Ronnie and Gaines and all of Lynyrd Skynyrd. I did like a little happy dance when she told me. But then, I mean, I also got a little bit shocked because also the fact that he was on the plane that killed them and the fact that he woke up in the Mississippi swamps and he had made it. So crazy story, I think, there. I mean, for anyone to really be a survivor of that. So their drummer Artemis Pyle and their two other surviving crew members, and one of them was Jerry, they were able to get out of the plane wreck and they had to go through the swamps and the woods until they found help. I think they ended up being able to flag down a local farmer. And that was the super sudden disaster that really hit Skynyrd, and it hit them hard. And the deceased members, they were laid to rest with Ronnie buried in his trademark Texas Hatter's black hat. And he was also buried with his favorite fishing pole in Florida. And meanwhile, his brother Johnny took his place as the band's lead. So Johnny Van Zant is the younger brother of Ronnie and Donnie Van Zant. So there's 3 brothers, you guys. There's Ronnie, Donnie, and Johnny. It must have been so confusing at their house and their names were called. I'm thinking of a little skit. Ready? Donnie, you have a phone call. What? Not Ronnie, Donnie. Wait, me? No, not Johnny, Donnie. I feel like it would be so hard for their parents to just call them around the house because I only have one brother and my parents still can't really seem to get our names right. So props to the parents. So quick little side fact about Donnie Van Zant. He was a member of another Southern rock band, 38 Special. They're coming very soon. So now after the tragic accident, the band, they did separate and the members went in different directions. In that next decade, some of Lynyrd Skynyrd members, they were successful, some were not. And for some members, bad things just kept coming, especially for guitarist Alan Collins, who was involved in a car accident in 1986, which killed his girlfriend and it left him paralyzed. And he actually ended up passing away 4 years after that. I think he died so shortly after that because something had happened when he was paralyzed. I think he either died from like pneumonia or something to do with his lung, because he ended up having lung problems because of being paralyzed. So after all of this, 10 years after the plane crashed, Lynyrd Skynyrd, they reunited in 1987. Thank God. Guitarist Gary Rossington came back. Billy Powell, Artemis Pyle, Leon Wilkeson, and Ed King, and Johnny Van Zant as their new lead singer. And even though this can be debated, I don't really like get in like heated like fistfight arguments about this, but I do just a little bit, like little classy debates, because a lot of people say that the soul of Lynyrd Skynyrd was Ronnie Van Zant. So when he died, that spirit kind of disappeared. So Lynyrd Skynyrd was never the same, and, you know, yada, 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 which I get. Like, I do see that, you know, he did bring a certain energy to the songs and the music and the whole band before that, the plane crash. But I do feel like the new group was able to live up to the original Skynyrd. I mean, I do think that it did it justice. I don't think that their songs suck now. I love their newer music just as much as the initial band's classics. And I mean, when you think about, you know, who better to take Ronnie's place? I mean, that's his little brother right there. So I think that's kind of precious in a way. Like, who better to do that? I think if anything, it's kind of, it's a really awesome thing that they kept it going. And, you know, a member of his family was the one who ended up being able to take his place. So it worked out. So I don't really agree when people say that. So since the reunion, many of the earlier members, they have left the group and some have actually passed away. Wilkinson died in 2001. Ian Evans, who replaced Leon Wilkinson after his death, he also passed away in 2009. And then keyboardist Billy Powell, he died in 2009 as well. So with those deaths, Gary Rossington is the only survivor from the first Lynyrd Skynyrd. He's the only one from the original band. So now Skynyrd's members consist of, we have Rossington still. There's Ricky Medlock on drums, mandolin, guitar, and vocals. Michael Cardalone, who plays drums. Mark Medacha, he plays guitar. And Peter Keys, who ironically plays the keyboards. Johnny Colt, who plays the bass. And we have Johnny Van Zant. Well, I should have mentioned Artemis Pyle left too, but that was later. So just to wrap up Lynyrd Skynyrd, here's some interesting facts about the band. They are in the Guinness Book of World Records for a band that is still going while having most of the original members die. So once again, they do get recognized for being a band that has more newer members than original. The body of Ronnie Van Zant was illegally removed from his grave because some vandals wanted to validate the rumor that he was wearing a Neil Young t-shirt, who was a rival of the band. They actually call him out in Sweet Home, Alabama on that. And I also heard, I'm not sure if this is true, but I also heard that, and I'm not sure if this is before or after the bodies were removed, but they also say that Ronnie Van Zant's, like, his tombstone plaque was found in, or it was stolen, and then they found it later in, like, a dried up riverbed. So I don't know why people were going after Ronnie Van Zant. Anyways, another interesting fact about Ronnie, actually, is that he apparently did not wear any shoes during live performances. Whatever floats your boat, dude. And then after 7 shots into getting into the Hall of Rock, or the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I think I'm thinking like Hard Rock Cafe. I'm always hungry, you guys, so maybe I just mixed the two up together. Whatever. You guys knew what I meant. So Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. In 2005, they were finally brought in, and they were presented by Kid Rock, but this was in the 2006 ceremony. So finally, they are in there. I think they have a well-deserved place. And that is one of the loves of my life, Lynyrd Skynyrd. So I did want to, that's going to be the last time we're going to hear from that band, because I did want to, I wanted to play a song that was sung by the original group and by Ronnie Van Zant. And then I thought it would be kind of cool to include a song that was sung by Johnny Van Zant, just so you guys could kind of get both of the generations and all that. So this is the last time that we listen to Lynyrd Skynyrd here on Good Old Days. Say goodbye. Wave goodbye, because I am. So now we're going to take a quick break with a very quick word from Bosco. So stay tuned. You're just too good to be true.
Can't take my eyes off of you. You be like, coming at you with another Bosco break. Christina Chesterman, 21, was studying to be a nurse when she was killed by a suspected drunk driver last year. But she managed to save lives anyway. A registered organ donor, Chesterman gave 5 people, including a baby, new life, and now the woman who received her heart wants to do something in return. Susanna Vieira, 64, has vowed to check off everything on Chesterman's bucket list, written down on a piece of paper her mom recently found. One of the items, save someone's life. Another, be in 4 places at once. Kinda trippy if you ask me. Vieira had completed several of the tasks already, including learning to fly a plane and riding a camel, ABC News reports. Vieira says, together, we will finish her bucket list. I'd like to thank all things I continue to accomplish in my life. I'm taking Christina with me, Vieira continues. Chesterman's mom adds that she felt an instant connection to the woman she just met. Chesterman's friends are also helping to complete the bucket list, including one who took Chesterman's picture along for a first-class flight and another who went skydiving in her honor. You wonder why someone like that is taken so young, but I believe Christina was one of those very rare people who was so complete as a person already, says one friend. The rest of us are just a work in progress. As for another miracle, Jahia McMath, the 13-year-old girl declared brain dead not long after having her tonsils removed in December, has been kept on feeding and breathing support at St. Peter's University Hospital in New Brunswick, New Jersey. Now, the Oakland, California girl's family says Jahia is once again showing brain activity, and they're asking a Bay Area court to walk back its declaration that she is dead. The newspaper notes that were this to happen, it would mark the first time an individual declared brain dead was found to regain brain activity. One prominent physician says such a reversal would be miraculous and would force us to re-examine the whole nature of death in America. Then he added, but I don't believe it. The family's attorney, meanwhile, says he has medical experts, including world-class experts on brain death, who will testify she is not brain dead. In court documents filed Tuesday, Christopher Dolan also said and claimed Jahi now responds to commands given by her mother. He says the determination of brain death occurred when there was swelling in her brain, and he says that swelling has subsided. While family members haven't disclosed who is privately paying for Jahia's care, they've acknowledged that by reversing her status as dead, she'd be eligible for state benefits just like others who are on ventilators and not brain dead. A hearing is set for Thursday. That's it for your Bosco break. Get back to the show.
And we are back to good old days here on radio.dominican.edu. So now here's something kind of different than what we've been hearing so far, but it's my pleasure to introduce our next band called the Ozark Mountain Daredevils, and here is their song, Fly Away Home.
Standing in the trees, I get lifted by the leaves and carried away by the wind. Turning around, I touch down on the ground and then I'm drifted away again. You've got to fly. Looking out my window, reflections of a rainbow as the evening rain comes down. Trumpets start to blow and when them stars start glowing and my head gets lost in the sound. You've got to fly away on home. Hallelujah, fly. Got to fly away on home. Hallelujah. Fly away, yeah. Fly away on home. When that evening rain comes down, let your head get lost in the sound. When that evening rain comes down, fly away.
One once again, that was the Ozark Mountain Daredevils with their song Fly Away Home. This one is, I actually have kind of a funny story about this song. First, I want to mention that this was from their 1976 album called Men from Earth. And now this is a little bit of an embarrassing story on my part, but usually I don't really care who hears my music. I used to be like that. Like whenever I was blasting this kind of stuff in the car and I'd be at a stoplight, I'd be like, okay, time to turn it down. But now it's like, whatever. But I was listening to this song actually driving to Dominican. And I had Fly Away Home just blasting. And it was during, I hate it because it's always like the worst part that people hear. And it was during the part where the guys go like, fly away on home. And then everyone shouts like, hallelujah. And I sounded so like there's a sermon going on inside of my car. So I like, it was the quickest reflex I've ever had. I was like, yep, turning it down now. So anyways, this group originated in Missouri, focused in Springfield. And even though they don't have the same sound that we have been hearing so far, but they're still classified, believe it or not, in the genres of country rock and southern rock. And the Ozark Mountains, I have you know, are actual mountains. They spread into the states of Arkansas and Kansas and Oklahoma and, of course, Missouri. And even though this can also be debated, some people actually, I think they say, like, they also spread into Illinois or whatever. Those places are considered to be the official states that are in the Ozark Mountains region. So back to the band, the Daredevils, they first formed in the early 1970s, specifically in 1972, and they are still playing. In the last 42 years, the Ozark Mountain Daredevils have had 24 different members, and now it consists of 9 members. There's John Dillon, Mike Randa, Steve Cash, and then we also have Bill Jones, Rule Chapel, Ron Gremp, Dave Painter, Kelly Brown, and Nick Sibley. So John Dillon is on guitar. He also plays the mandolin, the fiddle, the harmonica, keyboards, and vocals. Granda does vocals. He plays guitar, he plays bass, and he plays more mandolin. Steve Cash, he is on keyboards. He also does some vocals, and he plays the harmonica. I attempted to learn this thing, and I sucked at it. I could not figure out how to play the harmonica. It's definitely not a strong suit of mine, but I'm not going to give up yet because it seems just like one of those instruments that's so handy to know because you could just pretty much put it in your pocket and take it with you wherever. And I feel like, I mean, sometimes if you have to wait in line somewhere, you can play the harmonica. If you're stuck in traffic, you can play the harmonica. If you're just walking down the street, you can play a harmonica. So, you guys will hear about me soon. I'm going to be famous for that. If I magically get the power to be like a rock star at the harmonica, which I highly doubt. So, moving along to Bill Jones. He plays the horns and he plays an instrument called the woodwinds. They're like flutes and reed pipes. And then we have Rule Chappell, who also plays keyboards and he does vocals. Painter is on guitar and he does additional vocals. Practically all of them sing almost. Ron Gremp plays the drums and he does further percussion. Kelly Brown plays some more keyboards. And Mr. Nick Sibley is on the guitar and the mandolin and more background vocals. In the current band, Steve Cash, John Dillon, and Mike Granda are the old-timers and the veterans that stuck with the Daredevils since the 1970s. The original lineup was signed to A&M Records, and the first album was released that year. And then 1 year later, their second album came out. It was called It'll Shine When It Shines. And it was this record that brought the Daredevils' biggest hit single during their whole career. That song was Jackie Blue. And Jackie Blue, like, it's a cool song, you know, I'll say that. But I actually like, probably my all-time favorite by this band has to be Fly Away Home. So here's an interesting connection. John Dillon and fellow Daredevil Steve Cash, they were two of the musicians that were really behind the success of Jackie Blue and Fly Away Home. And they actually played with Waylon Jennings and Jesse Coulter on the 1978 album called The White Mansions. And you guys, I'm not even kidding you. This is like, I'm actually having so much fun putting these shows together because I'm not even realizing like that I, you know, chose Waylon to be the first artist. And then when I was planning out what to say about the Ozark Mountain Daredevils, I was like, whoa, holy cow. Like, this is actually like relevant. Like, it totally, I don't know. It's like a coincidence. I swear to God, I'm not lying. It's definitely just crazy how it's all like working out, and I'm choosing artists that somehow tie into each other for that show. So it's working. Now, the album White Mansions, it can be a little bit of a controversial topic because it was a record that was kind of like a diary. It was pretty much like a document of the lives of people in the Confederacy, in the Civil War. And I say that it was controversial just because, like, specifically, like, the way that the album is described is a documentary of the white people's lives in the Confederacy during the time of the Civil War. So, I mean, yeah, you know, that's why it's kind of like, well, so songs were written and they were performed by Jennings and Coulter and John Dillon and Steve Cash. And this is specifically called a concept album because it had this theme. So what the theme was that each artist, they had a different character, and then they would portray these personas. So a couple of guys from the Daredevils have worked with Waylon on a pretty unique album. You don't really have anything like that coming out these days. And that is all I know about the Ozark Mountain Daredevils. Definitely, I do really like these guys. They have a different feel than what I usually listen to. And I'll admit that they're one of those bands where I don't really have all that many songs, but I definitely encourage you to check out. I mean, Jackie Blue, you guys may like it more than this one, but who knows? So now we are going to continue to mix it up with a more modern song that isn't country. I switched it up again, but instead it's kind of like more of a blues and more of a rock feel. So let's go ahead and listen to the Black Keys. This is one of my all-time favorite modern bands. So here's Black Keys with their song, Keep Me. Back, you just heard Keep Me by the Black Keys. So this band was formed in Akron, Ohio by two dudes, Dan Auerbach and Patrick Carney, and with only two members, the Black Keys, they mainly have only three components. We have guitar, drums, and vocals, with Dan on vocals and guitar, and then Patrick with the drums. And my coworker, Timmy, it was either him or his friend that saw them in concert. I don't remember. But Timmy told me that they weren't as good as was expected, because I feel like when you hear their music, it's super like high energy and it's just like they're rocking out. And he said that it's not that they were bad, they just weren't amazing live. But then he followed up the story and he defended the Black Keys by saying, well, then again, they are only two guys, which I feel like it makes sense. So pretty significant difference, actually, from a few of the other bands that we've heard so far, since this group is only a duo, because we've had, we've had ZZ Top, which was like three guys, and then we had Kentucky Headhunters, where, yeah, well, still though, this is like the only actual duo, especially for, you know, I don't know where I was going with that, but I'm comparing it to like Molly Hatchet and Lynyrd Skynyrd and the Daredevils, and, you know, groups that have had such different, like so many different members. So these guys have just been, it's just them two. And the actual genres that this band gets grouped into are garage rock, and then indie rock and blues rock, which I'm sure you heard a lot of here. And the pair has a lot of blues sound that really came from Auerbach's blues influences. And this song, and, you know, many more of their hits, display a little bit of blues just with those crazy good guitar riffs. Oh, I love this band's guitar riffs. And it's easy to really, really spot those. So this particular song, Keep Me, was off of their album, The Rubber Factory, from 2004. And in that decade or so, well, I feel like they started getting a lot more recognition as far as like their songs being played kind of in movies and in more media. Because around 2008, I think that's when I heard Keep Me in the first season of a very popular show, Sons of Anarchy. I love that show. I keep repeating the seasons on Netflix. I do have a lot of catching up to do, though, with season 6 and 7. I'll admit that. Got very, very behind, but whatever. I'll catch up. And this song was played, I forgot what episode. I only remember that it was season 1. It came on, here we go, here's another little skit. It came on right when Gemma and Clay, it was that episode where Gemma takes like a skateboard to Cherry's face after like her doing some with Clay and all that. And that's when Gemma and Clay, they ride away from the police station, and that song like came on. So besides Keep Me, Sons of Anarchy actually used more of the Black Keys. They had their song Busted in another episode. Great song. That's also a really, really good one. And they also played Hard Row at the start of the very first episode. I remember that. I know that show was going to be my new addiction right then and there. Right when I heard Hard Row, I was like, oh, yep, I already love it. So the Black Keys has also spread into some pretty popular movies as well. My ears easily pick up on this band. It's weird. It's kind of creepy, actually. But for example, in Neighborhood Watch, they played I Got Mine right before the showdown with the aliens. I think that's when they're like heading to, what's his name? It was Jonah Hill's character. Franklin, I think that was his name. They're heading to Franklin's house, and they're getting like all their guns and their ammo, and they're stocking up for the war with the extraterrestrials. And they were also in Bad Words. I saw that movie in the movie theater, actually. Again, my poor mom, she's always with me when I start jamming out into songs. So Heavy Soul was their song that came on. I started rocking out with my candy and probably slushy, because I can't go to the movies empty-handed. And then also their song When the Lights Go Out was in Black Snake Moan. Oh, you know what? Oh, wait then. I take it back for 2008 being when they were getting popular, because this came, let's see. Yeah, Black Snake Moan was released in 2006. So they were put in a TV and film sooner than I thought. And a lot of blues in that movie, by the way. And Black Snake Moan, Samuel Jackson even sang some blues. So When the Lights Go Out fit perfectly in that song. I was actually going to play, or in that movie, I was actually going to play this song for today, but we went with Keep Me. And then I also heard another Black Keys song. This one was Lonely Boy. It is in a trailer for a new movie coming out. This movie title is going to kill me. It's like on the tip of my tongue, Alexander and the Horrible Day. But it's longer than that, though. What is it? Ooh, Alexander and the Horrible terrible, very bad, no good day. I definitely got the order mixed up. It still doesn't sound completely right, but I'm pretty sure it's those adjectives or whatever. But with the title like that, you know what? I'm calling it quits. It's close enough. And that is our last band for today. How about that, you guys? It's 9 on the button. Alrighty, so we wrapped it up today with a more bluesy kind of rock feel. Switched it up a little bit just because I was even getting a little bit, not bored, but, you know, getting a little tired of mainstream country. So had to throw something different in there. And that is show number 4, my friends. So I hope you enjoyed our songs from today. Please make sure to stop by next Monday at 8 for Good Old Days with me, your host, Jax. Oh, there's Sons of Anarchy again. So tune in here on Penguin Radio, and I will see you later. Alrighty, let's get back to some music.
Shed the toe, no slogan, faded 14 karat plated, so we're feeling like gold.